Welcome to the Music of America podcast, where every week we visit a different state in America and meet a different guest in the music industry. Every day, Monday through Friday, we begin in Alabama and we end in Wyoming. I'm your host, Tom Pollard. Let's talk music here on the Music of America.
It's Thursday in Rhode Island and we're about to wrap up the week. But we got one more guest tomorrow and one more guest today. We're going to talk with Josh Sherman today from Kingston, Rhode Island, who's been playing music for quite some time, and we'll talk with him about his decades of work in music and playing and so on and so forth. Really looking forward to it, and we'll get with Josh in just a moment. In the little town of Kansas called Tecumseh, you're going to find a place called Monkey House Guitars. Monkey House Guitars is this small, made-to-order guitar shop. If you can think it, he can build it. Some of the most beautiful handmade guitars you'll ever see, meticulously designed and crafted as per your specifications. Nothing by machine, all hand-laid frets. Everything is routed and sanded in the shop at Monkey House Guitars. The Multiverse Guitar, singularly one of the most innovative and interesting guitars I've ever had the joy of seeing get made. And you can have that same experience by watching the photos and videos that he has on Facebook at Monkey House Guitars. These are all made at the hands of Mike Thompson, who will not let you call him a luthier, but he is an amazing artist. And so please check him out. Monkey House, it's all one word, Monkey House Guitars, Tecumseh, Kansas. If you can think it, he can build it. Our guest is Josh Sherman from Kingston, Rhode Island. I've never been to Rhode Island. I've lived in Vermont. My son-in-law is from Connecticut. I've been to Boston. And I've been all around there. I've been to Connecticut a couple of times, actually, and just never been to Rhode Island.
Well, you got to come over here.
I'm really impressed with as small as the state is, but the quality of musicianship that comes out of that state's amazing.
Right. It is amazing.
Are you from there originally, and then, Josh, born and raised?
Well, I was born in Brooklyn, New York, but I grew up in Kingston. My dad was a professor at University of Rhode Island. I'm back here after years of being away, and came back here in about 1979, and been in Rhode Island ever since.
Wow. You've been there your whole music career then?
No. Actually, I kind of started, I started playing in high school. I played saxophone and clarinet in high school.
Okay.
And then by the time I was a junior or senior in high school, I started picking up the guitar because I got into, it was the early 60s, and Bob Dylan and Joan Baez and Phil Oakes and all those, Tom Rush, were all early influences on me. So I started getting into playing guitar and singing. And then I went to the University of New Hampshire as an undergraduate, and I started performing around there, which I did throughout my college career there, coffee houses and clubs here and there, and concerts. So that's kind of when I started performing. Then after college, I went to Indiana University and to study folklore in the folklore and ethnomusicology department. So I did that for 2 years and in Bloomington, Indiana, which is a great music town. And I stayed there another 5 years after I left school. I decided I didn't want to be an academic at that point. But I just met a lot of great people, and it was just, as I said, a great music scene there.
Yeah.
And so I spent about 8 years and 7 or 8 years in Bloomington, and then I went to Eugene, Oregon for a year.
Oh, wow.
Just kind of looking for, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. So I spent a year there, and then I decided to come back home. So came back here in 1979, So I've been performing all these places, lots of clubs, and not touring so much, but playing around wherever I was living.
Wherever you were
building up, building up a small but faithful following.
Kind of cool though, because you were doing it at the time that it was cool, right? So it's like right after the beatnik era, right?
Right,
and you're doing the coffee houses, the I call it the Baez Dylan era, but that's what people were.
Or as Tom Rush calls it, the folk music scare of the 60s.
There we go. I love it.
Yeah. Well, being in Rhode Island was great because I was 20 minutes away from Newport.
Sure. Right.
Went to the festivals. I was at the festival in 64 and 65. And, you know, I was just a kid then, but, you know, high school. And so I got to see all these incredible musicians, not just the really famous ones like Baez and Dylan.
Right.
But a lot of the, you know, I really had gotten into old traditional blues quite a bit.
When I
started playing. Yeah, well, there's a fellow around here in Kingston who went to URI who's became very well known. His name is Paul Jeremiah. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's a great blues guitar player, and he was a real student of the traditional blues. So I used to kind of follow him and got to know him a little bit. And so I through that, I kind of got into hearing about Robert Johnson and Muddy Waters and Sunhouse and all these old guys.
Yeah.
And then I went to the Newport festivals in those years, and they actually had those guys, some of them that were still alive.
Yeah.
Mississippi John Hurt, Sunhouse, Howlin' Wolf.
Wow.
It was pretty amazing. Jim Queskin Jug Band, they were younger, you know, and but all these old traditional players. So that was really a great education.
I just heard an interview, it might have been Clapton. I think it was Clapton, and he was talking about Howlin' Wolf. And it's as much rep as he got, he never got the credit he really deserved, because he was such a groundbreaker and such a virtuoso in the blues. And And when his name is kind of one of those names that you include, but you don't really think about it. When you think of Muddy Waters, you think of Guitar Slim, you think of those guys. But when you hear Howlin' Wolf, you think of the name, but you don't really think... And that's what he was saying. You don't really think about their work until you study it and really realize how innovative they were.
Immense. He was just immense. And as a person, he was this huge guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And very kind of menacing looking, you know. And when he played, it just... And he was very kind of sensual in his presentation when he sang, you know. So it really was amazing, you know.
Maybe that's what he was talking about, too, because it really was breakthrough that he...
Yeah.
He had
a
lot of innuendo. A lot of...
I think Muddy Waters kind of was a bigger name, but Wolf was just as good. And
sure.
I actually preferred him a little bit. I love Muddy too, but Wolf, his stuff is just, mind-boggling.
So did you play blues for a while, or did you always
play? I did. When I started playing out, I learned a bunch of old blues, Shakespeare, Blind Willie McTell, Robert Johnson songs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I started, that and Dylan songs and some, you know, whatever was kind of popular in the folk tradition at that point. So that was kind of my early performance. I didn't really write at all at that point. That came quite a bit later.
Right.
So, yeah.
But it was still so fresh. That whole thing was still so fresh.
It was.
You could go out and play a Blind Melon song or something, and they'd say, wow, you know, that's a great song. Well, it's really not, you know.
Right.
You ripped it off of Lead Belly back in 1912, you know.
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah.
So, but you evolved into the style that you play now?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think this, I guess I don't know what my style is. It's more styles. I'm pretty good spread of kind of different styles that I do. I still have some of that old blues stuff in me, but when I went to Indiana, I got really kind of inundated with more country music and bluegrass, because that's kind of what was really grew up around there.
Uh-huh.
And I met a lot of people who were playing bluegrass and studying it, and you know, so I don't play bluegrass, but I, you know, I've certainly been influenced by it. And country, old country music I love. And I do some of those old, you know, George Jones tunes and Earl Haggard tunes and stuff like that. Not too crazy about.
That's funny how we call that old country, but when we were playing it, it was country.
It was country, and actually it was new at the time.
Right.
When, you know, and the old traditional string band guys, you know, thought of that as something too commercial, you know.
Yeah.
But that was great. So I really my style has really spread. And then as I started writing, I guess picked up different things. You know, when I was in high school again, playing clarinet and saxophone, my hero was Benny Goodman. So not that I've ever really gotten into jazz as a player, but I've always listened to it. had some friends who really turned me on to, you know, Miles Davis and, or, you know, John Coltrane and sure, all that right. stuff. So I try to keep my ears open as best I can. So I'm, you know, I've been influenced. My dad wasn't a musician at all, but he was an incredible aficionado of classical music. Oh. So constantly in the house, that's all that was playing. He has this huge record collection and then later a CD collection, which I still have, of just about opera and all this, all the classical stuff, hundreds of CDs now. So I love how our
parental influence in music affects how we play or what we play, our disciplines and so on. Mom sang show tunes around the house. Dad couldn't carry a tune if you put it in a bag or a wheelbarrow. He's the only one I tell people, if he sang just the melody to Happy Birthday to You, you wouldn't know what he was singing. You'd think he was singing Honolulu Boogie by Mata Hoople, you know?
Really? Yeah.
But it's really fun on this side of the microphone to hear all the different people who have had different family influences of music, or non-family, or not direct family, like maybe it was an uncle or great-grandmother or something that really, that's where, I guess, where they got their roots from, you know?
Well, it's funny because my grandfather, my mother's father, who died when I was like 4 or 5, apparently, I only have vague memories of him, but apparently he was a amateur opera singer.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, and my aunt, my mother's sister, she was long gone, but she used to play piano and sing. So those are the only two people in my family that I know of that were actually played music. So
how have you seen the music as a performer? How have you seen performing live music change from, say, the 70s to where we are today? Is it still pretty much the same? You still do like 3 sets, about an hour and 45 minutes long or something like that?
Well, not for me, it isn't, because I still play in bars once in a while. Don't really, it's not my favorite thing to do. Because it's just too long a gig for me now. I used to be 4 sets solo,
Oh, wow.
And be played to one, you know, from 9 to 1 o'clock in the morning. And you better have some
dance songs in there or else, man.
Yeah, I had some dance songs and, you know, had to have a pretty varied, varied repertoire. So, but later, I try to do more kind of limited time concerts, you know, 2 hours, three, maybe three. I play solo a lot still when I play out. I do have a trio that I've been in for about 8 or 9 years now. It's myself and a married couple, and she and I sing, and her husband plays the bass, and so we do a lot of more popular stuff like Linda Ronstadt, and do a lot of oldies, 50s stuff. I also played in a country rock band for 10 years.
Did you really?
Called Biscuit City, which is the street I live on, the road I live on now. And I left the band about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I heard one of your shows. I was listening to some of your shows, and I can't remember who it was, but said something about bands being like a dysfunctional family without the unconditional love.
Isn't that the best line? The best line. I swear, I want to get really? Bumper stickers with that.
It's really?
So wonderful. Yeah, I tell that to everybody now because that was such a great line, and it was
perfect.
I'm accurate.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, I left the band. They still play once in a while. They've all gone on to different projects. And I decided I wanted to focus more on my writing and recording and doing small group stuff. So I also play with a couple of duos with a couple of other guys. Yep. So one of those I do more old blues stuff, and the other I do more old country stuff. And, you know, just it's good for me to just be able to play all this stuff, and you know, and my solo show I do many more of my original tunes than I get to do in the groups,
right? I differentiate it. You're probably doing what I tell people, there's like a difference between doing a show and doing a gig, you know. You do a show. You're doing. Yeah. You're going to go to a coffee house. You're going to play just your music. You know, and it might be a cover, but it's just you, and people are there to hear you.
Yeah,
they're not there to watch the football game and have music on in the background. They're not there because they're going to go out and party and have live music someplace. You know,
exactly. Yeah,
I think that's got me more rewarding, I guess, especially as a singer-songwriter.
For me, it is, for sure. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I left the band. I mean, I was having trouble staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning, standing on my feet, and I have a bad back, you know, usual aches and pains of getting older. And you know, people are drinking and having a great time, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun. But, you know, I kind of got more into what I was doing and wanted, I guess, appreciate situations where people actually listen.
I tell the story of Myra Flynn that played at a winery, and I was just fascinated. She's played at a winery, and I was living in Vermont, and you know, it's a winery, and it's you know, it's in a college town, so there's a little chit chat going on. It's a little loud, and she stops the room. She goes, "Hey guys," and she has every. I can't explain it without it sounding like she was harsh, but she wasn't. She was like gentle and loving and had the room to shut up. They said, you know, we work hard and we practice these songs so we can perform them for you, for the people that came hear us. And if you have something you have to say, I understand, but please take it in another room because that disrupts everybody else in here that they came to hear us, and then disrupts the work that we've done. And it's kind of like, I think it was attributed to Winston Churchill. They say he's the kind of guy can tell you to go to hell in such a way that you look forward to the trip.
You know? Right.
And it's kind of like that. She was really firm and really tasteful in how she said, "Let us do our show. We're here for you."
Yeah.
And I dug it so much how she did that. And it was amazing, but it's so cool because that's really what I started to really see the difference, the distinction between doing a show and doing a gig.
And a gig's more just work, and you know, you go along with what's going on. But the show is really something more. For me, it's something I really prepare for, and you know, try to create something.
Now, when you do a show, you get to play songs like "Heartbeat" and "Hello Again," and "One More Day," and "Round Here," and "Woman of Mine," all songs that we're going to hear today, and all penned by you. So we're going to start with "Heartbeat," and that list that I just gave. Where does that come chronologically? Is that a new song, an old song?
I think it's about 2 or 3 years. No, about 2 years old now. Uh-huh. It's funny because one of the things I don't like is to be. I don't write well under pressure.
Oh, really?
I was asked, there's a really good songwriters association called Rhode Island Songwriters Association here that I'm part of. And they have a monthly songwriters in the round where like 3 or 4 songwriters will perform 2 or 3 songs each. And one of the songs you have to choose is one that you wrote on a theme that was chosen by the crowd from the month before.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't really, you know, I was sweating it because I just don't do well under pressure like that. And anyway, I came up with the song "Heartbeat," and actually turned out to be a pretty good song, so I ended up recording it. And
now, this isn't a remake of the DeFrancos or whatever, the "Heartbeat." It's a love beat, that old pop song.
So I put it out as a single about a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Is it about anyone in particular? Is it about just that experience?
It's a compendium, you know, like all my songs, there are people that are in there that from my past or my present that are, but it's kind of not, you know,
non-specific.
Gotcha. It's a song about, well, it's a song obviously about getting older, looking back at different times in your life, and even when things haven't gone so well at some point, having hope for the future, I think, is kind of where it ends up. So that's
cool. So, we'll give it a listen. The first of 5 songs we'll hear today from Josh Sherman. The first one is called "Heartbeat" here on the Music of America podcast.
All right.
Thank you. Indiana summer. The corn was growing tall and strong. The days were warm and lazy. Felt like nothing ever could go wrong. Swimming in the quarries, laying naked in the sun. Fell in love with one another. Fell in love with being young. Then came cool September morning, when the heat began to fade. The summer sun went missing, like the promises we made. Just one summer's beauty, a love once felt so. Now only far-off memories of one of summer's songs. I remember that September of so many years ago. Lessons that I learned, so much I didn't know. And if love's the only answer, when there's no love to be found, just listen to your heartbeat, 'cause there's beauty in that sound. I've gone dry. This body's aching from the miles. I think of that September when we ran free, young and wild. Old times and old memories have their place, yeah, that's for sure. But the days bring on new changes, maybe better than before. And if love's the only answer, then there's new love to be found. there's beauty in that sound. Listen to your heartbeat, 'cause there's beauty in that sound.
A song called Heartbeat with Josh Sherman here on the Music of America podcast from Kingston, Rhode Island. I'm your host, Tom Pollard. Another song we're going to talk about, another title that looked familiar to me, but it's not. But I remembered the remake of Jazz Singer with Neil Diamond, and he had a song in there called Hello Again.
Really? Jeez.
Yeah. Remember that Hello Again? Hello.
I don't.
Oh, boy.
But it's hard to come up with original titles. I find that as I title songs and then find out there are other songs with the same title, but.
There's a joke about that. There's a joke, something about a piano player, or this guy's at a bar and he's drowning his sorrows. And the guy says, "What's the matter, buddy? He looks so sad." He goes, "Well, I'm a piano player, but nobody buys any of my songs." So he goes, "Well, go play something." He goes up and he plays this beautiful piece. And he sits down and the guy says, "That was magnificent." Everybody's clapping and applauding. He goes, "Nobody buys my songs." He goes, "Well, that's a great song. What's it called?" And it was like, you know, like it's a really raunchy title, you know, was the punchline. And because it's just so hard to come up with an original title,
I guess,
of a song that nobody's come up with before.
Yeah.
So what's Hello Again about? Is it?
Well, Hello Again is about, it's kind of a dreamscape, I guess. It's again, a compendium of old relationships that maybe weren't totally resolved. I wrote that song actually about 35 years ago.
Wow.
And I never thought much of it. And it was much more complicated than it ended up being. I mean, in terms of, I had added all this stuff to it and never thought much of it. And I kind of threw it in the pile of old songs that you look back on. And then when I started recording in the last few years, I kind of dug it up and played it for my friend who I record with. And he loved it. And so we recorded it. And it was fun to record because I did it straight on with guitar and vocals together, which a lot of our recording, we will put the guitar track down and then I'll sing the vocal over. That way you have more control over the mix and everything.
So you self-record, self-produce. You don't go like to a studio.
No, I don't go through. My friend has a studio.
Right, but
house,
I mean, you don't go to like
a nice
like,
one. No,
like not, Sound right. Tours Incorporated or something.
Yeah, like. No. My friend, I'll give him a plug. A fellow named Dave Furlong, who lives about 20 minutes away from me, and is also a great musician and has a great band of his own called The Honk, and he's a songwriter. And I ran into him several years ago. I had known him for years, but he came to one of my band gigs and said, "Hey, you have any original material?" And I hadn't really recorded anything before that. I said, "Yeah, I've got a few things, you know." So he said, "Come on over and we'll see what we can do." And so we started recording. This was in about 2016, I guess. And we started putting things down and it kind of triggered me to write some new songs. And so that's how it started, and we've been working together ever since. And I owe him a lot because he's been real generous with me. So in terms of recording and helping, and he plays on some of the tunes too.
Does he play on this one?
Let's see. Hello Again, he does not play on that one.
Okay.
I have a friend, Kathy Clasper Torch, is a wonderful fiddle violin player, and she plays and also plays some cello on it. And she's the whole string section we overdubbed. And my friend Bill Jetty is a great guitar player, and he overdubbed like three guitar parts in harmony with each other. So, but you know, that's it came. We were pretty happy with the way it came out. And I just released that one as a single, just
35 years too late.
A week or two ago. Yeah, really.
Pretty cool. Well, let's listen to it. This is Hello Again with Josh Sherman, our guest here on the Music of America podcast.
Thank you. Well, hello again. It's so good to hear your voice. Past it starts to cut me with its knife. When I heard that ring, yeah, I knew that it was you. 'Cause that ring was as urgent as your life. I guess I should have known I was no man for you. But in the blindness of my blues, I could not see. Now another lover's eyes, they burn you to the bone. And you say sometimes he's reminding you of me. Me from my dreams. Hear the ghost of you lay beside me through the night, still collecting for all of our extremes.
Hello again with Josh Sherman here on the Music of America podcast. A few more songs with Josh and a few more stories coming up here in just a moment. If you're looking for a world-class team to help you build the music career you've always wanted, check out Big Records World. Big Records World is the world leader in indie music. They're the most forward-thinking record label in music today. They just won the ISSA Independent International Promoter of the Year Award this past year, operating since 2019. They've got a full team of professionals and services and the connections that you need in the music industry. The best part, they do everything non-exclusive, so you don't have to worry about losing control of your brand or your music. Big Records World has a vast team specializing in sponsorships, touring, nonprofits, distribution, marketing, radio sync licensing, television, even this podcast. Their team works with indie artists all the way up to some of the biggest names in the entertainment industry. Whether you're looking for any of those things, I guess, whatever it is you're looking for, the Big Records World Music Community is a welcome to your family. So check them out today by emailing Mark at bigrecords.world. Mark at bigrecords.world. Don't go to bigrecordsworld.com. You won't reach him. Mark at bigrecords.world. Let them amplify your music and your brand. Got time for a few more songs here with our guest, Josh Sherman. The next song is called One More Day. And it doesn't sound like any song I've ever heard before. So we have an original title. Yay.
Yeah.
But it made me think of One Fine Day by Carole King, which was, I was
going to
if that's
great song.
Yeah. And was she also a part of the influence on how you wrote and performed back then?
Carole King?
Well,
I certainly absorbed, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow? All those early 50s stuff,
right.
Late 50s stuff, I should say. Love Carole King. It's a great, you know, that the Brill Building songwriters were certainly, you know, and stuff I listened to.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a real cool book. I don't know if you ever read it. It's called Hotel California.
No,
it's about Bob Geldof, I think, who was working in New York City, working for Arista or whoever. And he went out west to develop or find this new sound. And that's where we got the Laurel Canyon sound. He built a performance or bought, I guess, an old theater. And the guests would live there for free. They'd live upstairs and he'd pay them so they could go buy their, you know, their drugs and their alcohol and their food. But all they had to do was write, and then they performed on weekends. And it was like a Whiskey A Go-Go type place, but it's that I'm drawing a blank on the name of the place now. But it's a real cool book. It tells the story about how that whole scene was created and how Ronstadt and the Eagles and Crosby, Stills, Nash,
Graham
Parsons, all these guys came out of there. It's a really cool book.
Good. I'll look it up.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy that. So One More Day. Boy.
As we get older,
and this is funny because that line we talked about, that the bands are like a dysfunctional family without the unconditional love.
Right.
I got to share that because the bass player in the band I used to be in is in a country band, and they were on the verge of breaking up. They might be broken up now because of the argument between the drummer and a guitar player, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, well, I'll just find something else. I'll find another band. I'll do this or that. I said, John, you know, you don't have to. And we got talking about this. I said, you know, we're getting closer to the age where I'm no longer looking back at the starting gate. I'm starting to see that there's a finish line up there, you know.
Right.
And he took that and he wrote a song about it.
And
One More Day conjured up that image that we've got. That's how we got to go at our stage. Not that we're both really old, but at our stage, we got to get one more day out of this. You know, let's get
that's right. That's right. But this song is really more about, I guess, about having regrets about unresolved things in relationships and things you wish you'd said that you didn't say. And it's also about loss, you know, losing people through either the end of a relationship or death.
Mm-hmm.
And with, you know, the things that you wish you'd said, and a reminder to kind of try to do better at that, you know, in the current moment with whatever relationships you're in. So that's kind of what the song is about.
There's a Christian song called If I Could Sit With You a While. And the song is of he's singing to Jesus. You know, if I could sit with you. And it's a real cool image. Like you're sitting on a park bench just talking about life. But take Jesus out of the picture and think of a lost loved one, whether it's a lost loved one that you lost through time, you lost because, you know, that's what happens in life, or because you physically lost them. And that kind of makes me think about that one more day. What if you had that? What if you had that one more day?
Yeah.
Pretty
that's
cool.
Right. Yeah.
I love your writing, man. You write
good
stuff. It's really
thank
neat.
You. I'm not prolific. I did go through a period where I wrote a bunch of songs, but now I kind of squeeze them out once in a while.
Yeah.
I'm not disciplined in the way that I sit down and write every morning. I probably benefit from doing that, but
let's listen to the song and then let's come back and talk about your style, because there's something I say about style in just a moment. But right now, let's listen to One More Day with Josh Sherman here on the Music of America podcast.
If I had just one more tomorrow, I don't think I'd be feeling half as blue. For what I thought I had, but only borrowed. I don't know why I never said the words that float around my head. All those things I never did to keep my heart securely hid from you. Don't know why I never tried to get this foolish tongue untied for you. If I had just one more tear to cry, one more ocean waiting on disaster, I think that I would only want to try fill these empty pockets with nothing but your laughter. Don't know why I never said the words that float around my head. All those things I never did to keep my heart securely hid from you. Don't know why I never tried to get this foolish tongue untied for you.
Day with Josh Sherman here on the Music of America podcast. Boy, if we had one more day, wouldn't that be cool to have you on for 2 days in a row? It'd be cool.
Yeah.
So we were talking about writing styles, and there's a woman I interviewed, and every time I tell the story, I know her name until I try and tell the story, and I forget her name. But she drives around, does her work, walks around, does whatever, and has a pen, and will write down on a piece of a gum wrapper or the back of a sandwich bag or whatever. When something hits her, it might be a word, it might be a phrase, it might be a concept, and she throws it all in a bag, and then she decides it's time to write, and she has time to write. So she takes all of the stuff, dumps it out on a table, spreads it all out, and says, well, this line goes with this, and this over here goes with this over. It's like a jigsaw puzzle of all of these ideas that have come to her. But I thought it's a real clever idea.
And
the more I do this show, the more I find out that there are so many people that have things like that that they do. And that if you lined up 50 singer-songwriters, 30 or 40 of them are going to be unique. And the other 10 or 20 are going to say, well, I do a little bit of like what Tom does, a little bit what Josh does, a little bit what Mary does, you know.
Yeah.
So, and you said that you're not that prolific. What is your discipline or
your process?
Your process, yeah.
Well, it varies. Sometimes I'm just messing around with chords and a melody will kind of come to mind and then I'll try to stick some words to it. Other times I have an idea, a verbal idea, you know, idea in words, and I'll write the lyrics and then try to fit a melody that works with it. So it kind of really varies. Sometimes they kind of come together at the same time. I wouldn't say I have a real rigid process.
Most of the time it starts at music, though.
I don't know. I guess I'm probably a little more than half the time.
Oh, okay.
But sometimes it's words. You know, I'll get an idea, and I have notebooks with as you said, bits and pieces of words I go back to every once in a while and try to, you know, they'll kind of stimulate me to write something around it. So, and then I have, go ahead.
No, just, do you use the recording app on your phone?
No, not usually. Okay. I have once in a while when I'm in the car, which is probably a dangerous thing to do. But it's hard to remember things. You get a melody in your head or some words in your head, and then if you don't write them down, you lose them.
I talk to a lot of people that have like their phone by their bed because they wake up in the middle of the night with a phrase or a musical phrase, you know, or just a word or two or a concept, and they'll say it into their recorder. And then go back to sleep.
That's a great idea. Occasionally, I will actually get out of bed and sit down at my desk and write. When it doesn't happen real often, but once in a while, something.
I used to write in the airplane. When I was long distance, I was commuting long distance with my girl up in Vermont, and I would fly there, she'd fly here, and there's just a lot of time that you're just a lot of downtime, and you know it was early in our relationship, and I was excited, and you know, it's that infatuation period, so you know, it's a real romantic time, and I was really inspired to write a bunch of stuff then, and I had the time, you know, because when I'm here, and you know, I gotta work, I gotta take out the trash, I gotta polish the furniture, I gotta wash the floors, and you know, all that, here all of a sudden I have time to write and experience that. And now that I'm retired, I really, there's a lot of things I want to do, but I'm doing this damn podcast, and it eats up most of my day.
Well, it's a good thing to be doing, Tom.
It's a lot of fun, man. It's a lot of fun. I'd rather be doing this than a lot of other things, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
So tell me about Round Here. That's the next song we're going to listen to.
Well, this one is a little more of a, I guess, a rock, kind of, sort of a rock song. I'm a big fan of J.J. Cale, and it kind of started out sort of a J.J. Cale feel, and then my band actually played that one, this one, and it's kind of about, like most of my songs, it's about relationships, and in this case, inertia, not being able to decide, you know, or move forward, you know, sitting around and just having trouble kind of moving to the next step, which I'm sometimes capable of.
That's funny. Yeah, he came out with an album with Clapton a few years ago.
Oh yeah, I've heard it. Yeah, sure.
And the single that they released off that, they were pushing it all over, and they're pushing it on iTunes, pushing it on Facebook and Instagram and all that. And my editorial comment was, it's a great song, but I've heard it before. It's called The Breeze.
Breeze, of course.
Because it sounded, you know, again, like Ed Sheeran says, there's only six chords to work with, so you got to be really creative. The rhythm, the rhyme pattern, the cadence, everything, it sounded like The Breeze to me. They just changed the words.
Yeah. But this is your band hasn't played The Breeze, you know?
That's right. That's right. And or some J.J. Cale. I mean, my God, his fingerprints on so many songs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love his style because it's so simple. You know, The songwriters I admire the most, I think, are people that can really distill experience into the simplest form, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, people like Townes Van Zandt, and they're just masters at saying what they need to say. And that's I guess, what I strive for in my songs, you know, in the simplest way possible, it's still artful and soulful.
I love that. I run into that with other people, I'll just say, without naming any names, that go the exact opposite. You know,
yeah.
You don't need a polysyllabic word here to say happy.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
Well, let's listen to it. I'm excited to hear this Round Here with J.J. Cale influence, Josh Sherman, our guest here on the Music of America podcast.
Front porch, feeling the breeze, carrying a torch, cause there's nothing else to do, and I'm getting so bored around here. It's the funkiest feeling. car and drive till the morning light. Or maybe stay home and watch TV all night. Well, I tell you, life is funny, yeah, it sure is strange. And your baby leaves you cold with your head rearranged. Nothing stays the same, but it sure won't change around.
Round here with Josh Sherman on the Music America podcast, Kingston, Rhode Island. One more guest coming up tomorrow from Rhode Island, but this is our last musical guest. We'll talk about our guest tomorrow, Robert Duguay, in just a little bit here. It's this simple. Ready? You go buy Kitty's litter box, open the box, place litter in the box, introduce your cat to the box. When the cat has done their business in the box for about a month or so, close the box, throw it away. That's it. It's that simple. You just close the box, grab the handle of this biodegradable box, and throw it away. It's ideal for traveling with your favorite feline. It's affordable. It's convenient. And that's the one thing I really did not like about cats. I don't know how it became my job, but it was my job to clean the litter box. I hated cleaning the litter box. If Kitty's litter box were around today, or was around 20 years ago, let's say, who knows? I might still have cats. Kitty's litter box, it's all lowercase. kittyslitterbox.com. Order today. It's perfect. And that's my pun.
Love that.
You're smiling. Oh, you're a cat lover? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we had two cats. They're both gone now. And we have a dog that won't tolerate cats now. So can't have cats, but we love them. But it was my job to clean up the litter box. And yeah. Never my favorite thing to do.
Never is, especially when they've had the wrong thing to eat, you know?
Yeah, right.
That's pretty disgusting. Well, we got one more song coming our way from you called Woman of Mine. Is this the song you wrote for your wife?
Ah, that's funny, because I always kid her and tell her it is. And she's in there for sure. But again, it's a compendium of different people and stuff I just made up, I guess. Because I like to use humor in my songs when I can. And,
yeah.
But this one came out that I think kind of funny. And
What's the funny line or the funny catch we should be listening for?
She's the yin, the yang, this woman of mine. Just that she's very opposite in different ways. Like, she's sweet as a kitten. She's got that thing that keeps me smitten. I'm blanking on the lyrics right now, but
it happens to all of us. So
yeah. Hopefully, I remember them when I'm performing.
Right, right. Well, I use an iPad. I cheat. I use an iPad to this.
Yeah. I use one too now. I never, for 40, 50 years, I never used one. And now I'm just you know, just
it's an acceptable tool of the trade, so I take advantage of it.
It is now, I guess.
But I do not want to see Keith Richards up there singing
in
a shelter looking at an iPad, glancing, doing the occasional glance. I don't want to see that.
Right. Yeah.
So somewhat funny, somewhat about your wife, but just sort of, again, like a concept song.
It's just a concept of, you know, relationships and dealing with people's different sides.
I bet songs like this, though, and your style, Josh, seems like this would really lend itself to house concerts.
Yes, it does. This is a song that always seems to go over really well.
Yeah.
It's also the style of it is another, you know, in terms of my playing style, I influenced by a lot of early 1930s and 40s stuff, too. You know, and I do a lot of covers of that kind of stuff. Not a lot, but several things like some Fats Waller songs, stuff like that. So it feel, you know, the feel of kind of, I guess, Tin Pan Alley, Ragtime, all that kind of more than three chords. You know, so that's where this one came from.
Yeah, so you're going backwards. What we do when my buddies and I get together and jam, you know, we'll do a lot of 1-4-5 blues songs. We're best off if it's a one chord song. We're trying to get it down to where there's no chords at all.
We can just... John Lee Hooker's great for that.
That's right. One chord song. Johnny Lee Hooker. There you go. Well, let's listen to your last song here. This is Josh Sherman's last installment of music. The song is called Woman of Mine here on the Music of America podcast.
3-4. Got me a girl I truly love. She's the only one I ever think of. She's a big load of trouble. You know that woman of mine. Well, she's tougher than nails, sweet as a kitten. She got that thing that's keeping me smitten. She's a big load of trouble. You know that woman of mine. Woman of mine, oh woman of mine. She's the yin and the yang. Lemon and lime, I love that girl. Sweet talking woman of mine. Well, hands on her hips, rolling pin in her hand. Says she gonna leave me, find a real rich man. She's a big load of trouble. You know that woman of mine. Spring, summer, fall, whatever the season, she's a big load of trouble. You know that woman of mine. Whoa, yeah, she's a big load of trouble. That woman of mine. Whoa, well, big load of trouble. That woman of mine. Woman
of Mine with Josh Sherman, our guest here on the Music of America podcast, and the last musical guest this week on Rhode Island. We'll talk more about that here in a moment and hear more about that about our guest tomorrow in just a moment. But right now, Josh, the last segment of our show we call Shameless Self-Promotion. So you don't really travel. You're not a world tourist, right? So for those that want to hear you, hear more of your music, how do they find it? How do they support you to get your music?
Yeah, well, it's all over the usual platforms. Both my CDs and I think three singles are on Bandcamp.com, and everything else is on Spotify. I have a YouTube channel which has my CDs and my singles and a bunch of live videos as well.
And then
I've got SoundCloud stuff on SoundCloud. Several of my tunes, plus some really old 40-year-old recordings that I, you know, came up with from old tapes.
That would be fun to hear.
Yeah,
from like
yeah.
The 70s, 80s. Some of
the, well, just hearing what my voice sounded like 40 or 50 years ago, you know, yeah. It was like half an octave higher. And I played a lot faster. So that's, you can hear me on any of those. If anybody's interested in purchasing, they can do that through bandcamp.com, either the CDs, or you can stream them or download them. Mm-hmm. and order hard copies of the CDs if you'd like. So
that's what I do when I go to shows. I'm one of those CD guys. I always buy
me
the
too.
CDs just because I like to have something in my hand. I've got two CD players. I've got a boombox, and I've got a five player CD player in my car. And it's really the only two places I can hear CDs, but I will still do that because it helps support the artists. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a format that I like the format. I like listening.
Me too. And it's kind of disheartening that people don't have CD players anymore. You can't get them for a new car.
Yeah.
And lots of people just don't. They just download or stream everything now. And
right.
I think that there's a loss there because, you know, you don't get any liner notes. You don't know who's playing on the songs. And, you know, for me, that's all interesting stuff. And, you know, so.
You get with cats our age too, Josh. And you remember this. We remember you
LPs.
Go get the new Steppenwolf album. And while you're playing it, you would read everything about it. Who played bass on that? Who wrote
exactly.
this? Produced this?
Exactly.
So cool. And now you stream and say, oh, that was a neat song. Yeah, it's got to get
yeah.
good bands to
it. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a loss. I do. And maybe that'll come back. And actually, it sounds like seems like LPs are starting to come back, strangely enough. But
I just put an order in for the Civil Wars. Have a gold album with four new songs, four songs on. So
right.
I just put in an order for that because I don't even have a record player. But you know, I love the Civil Wars. If I can support them, I'll buy their album. You know, I'll get a record player eventually. What about like a website or Facebook, Instagram?
I do. Yeah, I'm on Facebook. Just type in my name. My last name is spelled Schurman. Josh Sherman, and I have a website. If you just type in Josh Sherman Music, it'll lead you to my website.
Yeah.
Or joshsherman.com. That's
the kicker,
though.
Make sure that they spell it the right way.
I have to spell my damn name my whole life because everybody assumes it's Sherman. So.
What if you started this year? You're in your 70s. So what if you start changing the pronunciation? No, it's Sherman. Sherman. That'll really throw them off.
Yeah, really.
So joshsherman.com, Josh Sherman on Facebook, and all music available, Bandcamp.
Yeah, I'm all over the place.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Josh, thanks so much. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing
it's
music
been my
with
pleasure.
Us. I love your art. I love this style, and I hope it stays alive, and I hope people learn from artists like you that it's just a great way to put music out there, and it's a great way to tell stories and get your feelings, and it's
absolutely
just wonderful. Thanks again, Josh Sherman.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you, Josh Sherman from Kingston, Rhode Island. Now, he's our last musical guest. Tomorrow, we're going to hear from a gentleman named Robert Duguay. He's an author and music reporter all around the Northeast. He's based out of Providence. He's got a lot of music connections, a lot of stories about musicians that he's met, introduced, etc. And he'll be your guest tomorrow. So join us tomorrow here on the Music of America podcast. You've been listening to the Music of America podcast. We invite you to follow us at our website, www.musicofamericapod.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X, formerly known as Twitter, under the same name, Music of America. Please check us out and give us a like and a follow. Every day, Monday through Friday, we will feature a new guest from that week's featured state. Keep following us as we evolve on these platforms to continue to give members of the music community a voice and a presence. And thank you for listening to the Music of America podcast. Let's see how that sounds.